Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Habitat loss is one of the greatest threats to the diversity of plants and animals on Earth. Parks and wildlands are an important tool for conserving ecosystems, but it turns out our backyards and even urban balconies can also play an important role. Naturalist David Mizejewski is the author of the book Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife. It's a practical how-to guide for creating gardens that are not only beautiful, but also provide functional habitat for wildlife. David, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
So what we're talking about here in creating habitat gardens is almost more habitat restoration than what we would typically think of as flower gardening. What does it actually look like in the end?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. A wildlife habitat garden really is a kind of habitat restoration. But the beauty of this idea is that just like a conventional garden, there are literally thousands of different ways that you could create this wildlife habitat garden, depending on how much space you have, what your budget is, what your aesthetic is, what kinds of wildlife you want to attract. So, you know, you can create a wildlife habitat garden that doesn't look too much different than what all your neighbors' yards look like, or you can go really wild with it and you can create a very natural habitat looking kind of space. It's really totally up to you. If you follow the basic principles of providing food, water, cover, places to raise young, and you use native plants, that's really the core concept. And if you do that, regardless of the design aesthetic you go for, it's gonna help wildlife.
Even if you've got, say, an acre, though, you're not creating, like your own little national park. You're probably not aiming to have major large predators in your backyard. What actually is the goal? What's a realistic goal for a wildlife garden?
Another great question. Yeah, when we talk about creating a wildlife habitat garden, the kinds of wildlife we're really talking about are things like songbirds, butterflies, bees, maybe small mammals, foxes and squirrels and things like that, that can happily and safely coexist with human beings. We're not talking about trying to attract, bears or mountain lions or, hoofed animals, like moose or deer. We're talking about the species that can, again, really coexist with us. And here's the thing. There are so many species that really could utilize the space that we've kind of taken from them through our development. And the notion of creating a wildlife habitat garden really is kind of the epitome of that old saying, think globally, act locally. We're in a wildlife crisis right now. We've lost something like 60% of the animal life on this planet in the last 50 years. Here in America, one third of species are at increased risk of extinction in the coming decades, including things like many songbirds. The monarch butterfly, for example, has crashed. There are bees that are getting listed as endangered. So there's a real opportunity here to give a little bit back to the wildlife that, again, used to live where we live. And it's as simple as just following some basic principles. And if we all did that, our cities and our towns and our neighborhoods not only, can look beautiful and be functional for us, but they can actually become part of the local ecosystem. And that's a pretty powerful thing.
Are there examples of this scale backyard habitat gardening actually helping some of those endangered species you were just talking about actually recover? Do we know if this works?
Yeah, it absolutely works. And I should say, and for most people, you're not going to have endangered species on your property. But there's definitely research that looks at, comparing a conventional suburban yard, for example, to a yard that has been certified by the National Wildlife Federation through our Garden for Wildlife program for following these basic principles. And it showed that there's more diversity of species and 50% more actual wildlife present from one yard to the next. So it really does work. And, part of the idea here is helping keep common species common. Most people are going to see relatively common species that, are not necessarily going extinct or sharply declining. But I mentioned the monarch butterfly. Monarch butterflies in the last 20 years have experienced a pretty scary population plummet. These are the kinds of animals that can benefit from a wildlife habitat garden because they rely on plants. Just by putting some natives back in your yard, again, like milkweed, which is the only caterpillar host plant for the monarch butterfly, we can restore habitat, have a beautiful garden, and actually make a difference for species.
David Mizejewski, the book that you've written, Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife, is a fabulous little book, a fairly concise, really practical step-by-step guide to getting started on habitat gardening. And of course, the first step is assessing what you have and where you would like to go with that. Without going through the whole checklist, which you do provide, a questionnaire and checklist in the book, what are some of the considerations if somebody's interested in maybe turning part of their property into a habitat garden? What should they be thinking about?
This is really the kind of question you should ask yourself whenever you're doing kind of a garden or a landscape project. But it's things like, you know, how big is my property? How much of it do I want to, you know, be managing or planting for wildlife or other things? What is the aesthetic of my neighborhood? You know, many people live in places where, you know, with HOAs, for example, and there's very strict rules on what your landscape can look like. Now, I would suggest that if you have really militant landscape ordinances like that, that are not friendly to planting anything other than lawn, I would say get involved locally, become an activist and speak up for native plants and wildlife and things like that. But, you know, you're going to have some constraints like that. Things like budget, you know, your physical ability to be out there gardening and things like that. These are all things you want to think about. And so how that might play out is, you know, you mentioned maybe you have an acre, a property that's an acre big. And right now, it's nothing but lawn. You know, maybe you don't, you know, you don't have the time to go out there and really rip up the entire yard. And that's totally fine. You know, maybe you start with a, you know, a 10-foot by 5-foot bed of wildflowers in which you're going to plant a bunch of beautiful native blooming perennials, maybe some shrubs that are going to provide nectar to bees and butterflies and other pollinators, and maybe even hummingbirds through their blooms. And maybe later in the season, some of those plants are going to provide berries that are going to be a food source, or they're going to be, again, a caterpillar host plant, or when they go to seed, that's going to be a natural food source for the birds. It doesn't have to be your entire property. You literally can do it anywhere. If you can plant something, you can be helping wildlife, including in the middle of the city. I live in Washington, D.C. I'm right in the middle of the city. I've got a typical D.C. row house with just a little narrow backyard. And I have, you know, a few dozen species of native plants in my little strip of garden around my patio. And most of them are on the ground, but I've got a bunch in containers. And in fact, I was just out there this morning and there was a carpenter bee nectaring at a wild geranium that I have growing in a pot on my patio, you know, getting a food source. So you can really do this anywhere. And doing that first step of assessment will just kind of give you a roadmap of where you want to go with your wildlife habitat garden.
David Mizejewski, the book Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife is, as I said, a how-to guide, but it also addresses people's potential concerns about this rather different way of approaching garden space, or even, as you mentioned, containers around an apartment in the city. What's the maintenance like on a habitat garden?
Well, again, it really varies depending on your individual space. So, you know, there's kind of a continuum in my mind, and I touch on this in the book, as far as how you go about planting or creating this wildlife habitat garden. So the key thing, as we've been talking about, first and foremost, is including native plants. That's really what the wildlife need to survive. And so you can choose for a kind of a conventional suburban landscape look and just, you know, put in native plants in your planting beds. And that's, you know, that's going to be a great habitat for wildlife. You could go all the way to the other end of the spectrum and go for a little bit more of a natural wild aesthetic, which again, the wildlife will love, but is not necessarily going to work for everybody. And by that, I mean, you know, having brush piles and having like a natural meadow or prairie garden that is going to be taller grasses mixed with wildflowers and things like that. But I'll say this, we have such a huge footprint in this country and in the world with the land that we humans kind of occupy. And that could be, again, with just some very simple changes and maybe, yeah, a little bit of a shifting aesthetic, viable, important wildlife habitat. 1 million acres is gobbled up by urban development in this country every year. And most of it is, you know, it's buildings, it's pavement, but it's also lawns and ornamental exotic plants that don't support anything. So even, you know, if you look at a a typical yard in America. And maybe it does look green and it does look beautiful. But if you are overlay its habitat value to wildlife, you begin to rapidly realize that you might as well just have planted plastic plants if all you have is a lawn and ornamental shrubs. But if you take that same landscape design and you replace some of those with natives, it's going to immediately increase the habitat value. And when I do it and my neighbor does it and the community does it together, the habitat value increases exponentially. And that's where we begin to see actual impact on species and making our cities and towns green corridors, and our neighborhoods connecting to the local park system so that animals have places to move across the landscape. And you really end up creating an ecosystem, even if your goal is just to see pretty birds. And that's totally fine. When you do that, you're going to inevitably help in the bigger picture as well.
Of course, you're talking about creating these gardens around our homes, and they are our homes. They are an investment that we want to protect. If you're talking about attracting a lot of insects, there can be concern about, well, am I attracting termites? And am I going to actually harm my home by attracting more of this wildlife? And for that matter, it's my home. It's where I live and my kids live and my pets live. What about space for us? How do you address those kinds of concerns?
Sure. And that's one of the things in the checklist in the beginning of the book to ask yourself, you know, do your kids need a lawn space to run around and kick the soccer ball? You know, do you live in an area where fire is a concern? You know, if that's the case, you know, you, that's going to dictate ultimately how you want to kind of create your landscape. And again, these are questions that apply to any yard or garden design, not just a wildlife habitat garden. So yeah, one of the very key messages is kind of what you said. You know, we love wildlife. We want to make sure it has a home and a habitat. We just don't want it living in our home. So one of the basic things, and again, this isn't specific to a wildlife habitat garden. One of the basic things everybody should be doing is making sure you kind of critter-proof your house and do a little check every year. You know, make sure that there are no gaps along your roof line where critters could get into your attic or along your basement or crawl space. Make sure that you have screens in your window. I saw a funny thing on Twitter the other day where somebody posted a picture sitting in her living room watching TV, and she looked up and there were two pigeons sitting on her bookshelf watching her. And I laughed, and my reply was, you know, it might be time to put screens in your windows because, you know, it's just a simple thing, right? I mean, so yeah, you want to make sure that you're not giving any wildlife an opportunity to get into your home. You know, again, if you're worried about things like termites, creating a wildlife habitat garden isn't going to create a termite problem in your house. Having decaying wood in your house is going to create a termite problem in your house. So yeah, you can create a little bit of a people zone around your home where, you know, maybe you do have some ornamentals and maybe there's a little bit of lawn. Although I would really encourage folks, if you do have lawn, is to have a natural lawn. Don't dump tons of pesticides and fertilizers on it. You know, lawns really are dead zones for wildlife, but if you have a natural lawn, at least all sorts of other plants are going to grow among the grasses and you're not poisoning the soil and the water with a lot of these toxic chemicals. So yeah, I mean, again, it's just part of your assessment process. And, you know, again, if you live in a fire zone, building a brush pile near your home is probably not a good idea. Again, if you live in the city like I do, I don't have a brush pile in my yard, which a brush pile is a project that I have in the book where you can kind of build a natural shelter by stacking logs and branches and basically making all sorts of nooks and crannies and crevices for lots of wildlife to get into. But here in the city, if I built that in my yard, it likely would attract rats. So I don't have that particular feature. And that's okay. Like I said, there's so many different ways that you can implement those four components of habitat depending on what works best for you. And they're food, water, cover, and places to raise young.
That's David Mizajewski. The book is Attracting Birds, Butterflies, and Other Backyard Wildlife from the National Wildlife Federation. David, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. This week, we're saying goodbye to an intern who's been with us and been really instrumental over the past month. We want to say thank you to Lexi Krupp and best of luck as you move ahead with your career. We expect great things. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.